Welcome to the On Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, I was on TV last night, and I stupidly said Danilo Gallinari when I wanted to say Andrea Bargnani. How's it going?
You sound a little tired, man.
I am a little tired. I was up late for no reason.
You got a little opening night hangover?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's good to have basketball back, though.
That was fun, yeah. Right? That was, yeah, that was right? Really good.
Even with several of the games ending in... I guess all the games ending with double-digit deficits. It was still a very good night, I thought.
Yeah, we got the backdoor cover from the Magic to make it a good start tonight, and then everything else just went to hell. If you followed my picks,
man, I was so close to I was really close to 3-0. I was so close that the Clippers just had not wet the bed.
Yeah. That fourth quarter, I mean, I guess we should start there. That fourth quarter was unreal. It's like, but I mean, we knew a lineup of Jordan Farmar, Xavier Henry, Wes Johnson, Jody Meeks. And Jordan Hill. We knew, like, that's their bread and butter. That's what they make, that's why the banners are up there.
You know what's kind of interesting? Powell, I'm not sure how happy Powell was. I think Powell was a little annoyed that he's like, God, what do I have to do to play in the fourth quarter on this damn team? Like, his look on the sideline and his general comments seem to be like, well, this is nice, but in general.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's some frustration there, but at the same time, like, I wonder how much players recognize, like, whoa, this lineup is humming. Like, we should not disturb this at all. Because that's really what it was, right? It wasn't a lack of trust in anybody else. I mean,
no.
Steve Nash didn't play. He played 20 minutes.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. It was simply a matter of, this lineup is kicking ass. Let's like, keep kicking ass. I'm on the Xavier Henry train, man. I'm in.
Oh, you're full bore.
Athletic forward that's shooting a little bit. That's like my bread and butter. I'm in. I'm sold on Xavier Henry. He's gonna get that Lakers contract this summer. I'm so excited already.
The what is it? 3 years, 18.
I was thinking about. I was like maybe 3 years, 50. And I was like, nah, he'll get the extra bump because he's a Laker. You know, one guy has a great year and he'll get 315. He'll get an extra million just for being a Laker.
Right.
And I was like, you know, I started with something ridiculous. I was like, what if he gets like 4 years, like 24 or something? And I was like, no, it can't happen. So I peeled it back a little bit. But yeah, he looked good. Jordan Farmar looked great.
Yeah, Farmar looked amazing. Well. Farmar was
fantastic. I love Jordan
fantastic.
Hill. I love Jordan Hill's game since college. I love Jordan Hill. Was it weird for you? Because I realized that most of these guys, you're like, these are both of the guys that you kind of go, when people go, oh, he's so good. And you go, are they? Are they really? Are they, though?
I mean, it's weird seeing bad basketball players play well. But, they just brought it in that fourth quarter. And it was, you know, I don't know if it was because the lack of, I guess, credit the Lakers have built up this offseason, or if it was just like we thought the Clippers were going to be so good, but I didn't even believe it was like, even with like 2 minutes left, I was like, all right, they're going to collapse. Like, the Clippers are going to make a charge back, and then there was just nothing.
JJ Redick not hitting spot up threes, like, that should not be happening.
Yeah, I mean, he was 2 for 5.
He's got to be the guy he's got to be that guy for them, though. When they're making those kind of runs to sneak back into games to steal them, because I've always defined this as really good teams in the NBA are able to win when things don't go right.
Right.
Things definitely did not go right last night, and like, he had opportunities to get them back in the game with a couple of spot up threes and missed, and that's his job. That's the thing that he's got to do. Now, it's one game, and it's not like he can. Like, I can't like tell him he should do more. You should really make that shot. Like,
yeah, I don't know that we can give JJ Redick shooting tips.
Right. But that was a problem. That was, I'm more not saying going forward. I'm more just saying that was the reason they couldn't crawl back in the game, is they couldn't get that big three to be like, it's only a 9-point game. You know.
Hey, DeAndre Jordan's a 50% free throw shooter.
Blake Griffin is not.
No, he's 3 of 10.
Rough night for Blake overall. Couldn't hit mid-range jumper. Only got a few on the pick and roll. Didn't have a real big poster dunk. DeAndre Jordan looked much better, despite the fact DeAndre Jordan ran out of steam. He looked really good in that first half.
Yeah.
And defensively, he did. Like he was active. He was mobile. He was extending out in situations to help, like, deter coverage, deter perimeter penetration, and then rotating all the way back. He just wasn't rebounding at all. He's got a rebound. DeAndre Jordan has got a rebound.
He had 11.
Did he?
Yeah.
That's crazy to me because they got killed so badly on the offensive glass.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, Jordan Hill dominated the offensive glass.
And even before Hill really got in, they had...
Kamen had a few, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was not...
No, I said this last night, and I think, like, it kind of speaks to your point. DeAndre Jordan's going to have awesome stats this year, and I'm going to have... I have no idea if they're going to mean anything.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because, I mean, look at his line, like... He had 17 points, 11 rebounds, 3 blocks, 3 steals. Like, we drool over that kind of line, right?
Do you feel like he played that well? I feel like he played really well for about 2.5 quarters.
Yeah.
And that's where he did most of his damage. And then the Clippers just stopped trying. Like, their effort level was just atrocious near the end of that game.
It was, it was bad. The Blake Griffin conversation's already bugging me. There are two conversations I hate out of this game. It's one that Blake Griffin doesn't work on his game or improve, and that he's overrated, which I think is stupid. And two, that Mike D'Antoni isn't actually a good coach. Like, I jokingly said, hey, maybe D'Antoni's a good coach, and like my mentions just got lit on fire.
They hate him.
I'm collecting an insurance claim right now on my mentions.
Do you have a good deductible on that? Is it?
It's actually surprisingly well. Like, surprisingly low. It's pretty good.
You get a sponsor for that. For when our mentions burned down. My mentions burned down, but luckily...
Luckily, we've got Geico.
Or Progressive. We really don't care. Anyone who wants to give us money.
Anybody.
The General, I would settle for.
Oh, I'd love the General Pod. If this was the Pick and Roll General Podcast...
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, Blake didn't have a good game last night. I mean, I think really the question that we have to ask ourselves is, will the Clippers even be .500 this year?
Well, I mean, to be fair, we all know how hard it is to win on the road in this league.
Of course, you know what makes me hesitate, though, when I make that joke, is we probably said the exact same damn thing about the Lakers last year after game one. Like, oh, are they gonna be really bad this year? Are they going to miss the playoffs? Ha, 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 ha. And they did make the playoffs, so there.
Yeah, there you go. The other game of the night, Heat Bulls.
Real back and forth, real yo-yo-y, Bulls came out and made they played their kind of game for that first quarter.
Yeah,
that was
their tempo, their game, exactly what they wanted. And then the Heat reminded us why they received rings before the game in the second quarter. It was like, oh yeah, we're pretty good.
It was like pig pen. In the first quarter, they came in and mucked everything up. They're just like throwing dirt around and shoving dust in people's faces. And yeah, this is going to be ugly. And then the Heat were like, no, we're just going to shoot a billion corner threes. You're not going to guard us well. We're done here. Their ability to just like hit that gear, though, that to me has always been, since 2011, that really has been a difference between Heat and Bulls, is the Bulls only have one gear.
Yeah,
and it's a high gear.
Yeah, it's a very high gear, but it becomes like, can you win 4 ugly games against this Heat team?
Yeah,
and that's what it takes, because that's how they win. They beat them up. They beat them up on the offensive boards, and they end up on top. And how do you win 4 games like that against this Heat team?
Well, you don't.
Right. This is what we're finding out.
That's just what I think. You're going to be doing a breakdown of Rose for tomorrow in advance of Thursday night's Knicks-Bulls game.
Correct.
First impressions from Rose in a full-speed game?
I thought he forced a lot. And I don't know if that was just, like, the moment of trying to... If there are weird noises in the background right now, it's because my dog is literally running circles around me. And I have no idea why. He forced a lot, which is weird because like all of his shots were either in the restricted area or behind the 3-point line. He didn't take a single mid-range jumper, which I found weird.
That is really weird.
And so
I think a lot of it is just, for me, is the Heat blitz him better than any other team in the league can. Like, they just – the Heat are one that they know that he is their structural integrity of their offense, and so they just send bombing raids at him and just constantly.
Yeah.
It's double team, trap, you know, backdoor steal, everything. They throw the book at Rose, and that's hard. That's hard to deal with when it's a really great team.
Chris Bosh was just fantastic last night.
He really was.
And it doesn't, as opposed to DeAndre Jordan, his box score just doesn't show it. Like, he had a good line. He was 16 points, 6 rebounds, 3 blocks. But he was just, he's so good covering those pick and rolls, either backside or out in front of it. He's just so good at it.
Norris Cole?
Ooh, Norris Cole. He's a spitfire.
Some way during the season, I want to get like a list of backup point guards, and we talk about whether we'd rather have Norris Cole than them.
Okay.
Because like, there's a bunch of guys I was thinking about last night. I was like, well, I would definitely rather have him than like John Lucas.
Oh yeah.
I'd rather have Norris Cole than even Darren Collison at this point, which pains me to say.
Oh, that's a lock. You know, that's a lock for me.
Yeah, and not surprising there. There's a bunch of guys that I'm like, yeah, I think Norris Cole's okay. He does his thing. I don't want him starting, but
funny enough that that Bulls team could really use Norris Cole.
Yeah, their bench unit. I think there a lot of people were Bulls fans. That's why I read a lot of last night on Bulls blogs was that they were really surprised that the bench was as bad as it was, because usually the bench is either really good offensively or really good defensively, and last night they were neither. Now maybe they'll get good in one of those areas as the season goes along, but. It was one Mike Dunleavy was not as good at defense as I think I kind of anticipated. Maybe he just needs to learn more about the system. And, they ran some sets out there because of Deng's foul trouble, and Jimmy Butler was in foul trouble too. But they ran some sets where basically Jimmy Butler was kind of the linchpin of the defense. And not to piss off the cultists for Jimmy Butler, but that didn't work out well.
No,
necessarily.
Not at all.
That was not ideal. So, I mean, good start for them. The Bulls, like, you have the bar. Okay, you just got trounced by the Heat. You have to get up to that level. That's where you got to get to. Because, you know, you can beat up on all the Milwaukees and Pistons that you want, but you're going to have to get to that level. You got to be able to have that gear. They have to find that gear this season. I think that maybe that's the lesson that I kind of hadn't really thought of. Like, we know how good the Bulls are. They have to find that extra gear that they can hit, and right. I've never seen them have that.
Right.
Magic Pacers was a surprisingly fun game.
Yeah, I loved that game.
Yeah, it was really good. The Magic are going to be really entertaining this year.
Yeah, it's kind of what I wrote in Power Tankings yesterday. Was which, by the way, you should check that out on CBSSports.com. Was
that? Yeah, I got a response from that. People like that.
Yeah, they did. That was surprising. It was. The thing about tanking is, like, you can do it the Philadelphia 76ers way and just urinate on everybody's season tickets, or you can give them a product that it's like, hey, we're going to lose, but these guys are kind of fun to watch. The right. Suns are doing that, I think, better than anybody, and the Magic are right up there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, Andrew Nicholson, how fun was he?
He didn't get a single shot in the second half, right?
Yeah, not great management from Jacques Vaughn.
Yeah, like this guy's on fire. Like, the corner three was hitting. He hit two corner threes. He looked so measured in every move he made. That was like a fun experience off the bench for him.
Tobias Harris didn't play because of an ankle.
Yeah.
And they don't have enough offense or talent on that team to survive when a major player's out. Like, they have to have everybody going.
Right. Which is what we saw last year. We saw that last year when Glenn Davis was down.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I took a note of from last night is young teams, their biggest problem is not being able – young teams with talent can always hang at times with good teams. It's that they can't consistently play from quarter to quarter, and you saw that where in the third quarter they just got trounced.
Yep.
They played really well for two quarters, and then third quarter comes and they get trounced. And that's the biggest problem that happens with young teams is – quarter to quarter, half to half, game to game. You don't have that consistency of play, and that's going to be their big challenge this year.
Yeah, completely agree. It was kind of funny right away. They're down 12-0, and immediately you went to, "Uh-oh, I should not have picked them to cover."
And then they were leading by two, and I was like, "Looking good." And man, thank God for that Mo Harkless backdoor cover, man.
Oh yeah,
I love the backdoor cover.
Roy Hibbert was a monster.
Just insane, that guy. So good. I hate people talk about Blake Griffin. Like, Blake Griffin, at least you can point out very, very legitimate deficiencies in his game.
Sure.
that people exaggerate. The fact that people don't think that Roy Hibbert is good makes me insane.
Oh,
he's so good.
And like, all right, you and I have talked about Nikola Vucevic quite a bit on this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, Vucevic is one of the better rebounders in the league. And he ended up with 10 rebounds, but it just felt like he got dominated on the boards.
Yeah.
Just dominated.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a lot of that's because Vucevic is really young.
Yes.
He's going up against a really elite player.
His positioning wasn't great. You could see he kind of got caught watching things and then wasn't in position to rebound. And Hibbert is really good at taking advantage of that because once he's in place, you can't move him. He's just too big.
I've read a little bit of this, that part of it is they're trying to do more defensively with their young talent this year. Like last year, basically Jacques Vaughn was like, just go out there and play, kids. It was like a fifth grader basketball game where all you're hoping for is effort.
Right.
And now this year they're actually like, okay, let's try and actually have some ideas of what we're doing. And that causes problems because then you're overthinking stuff. You know who I was really impressed with, actually? Lance Stevenson impressed me, but Paul George's offensive game looked – you expect it to be better because he's an all-star and he's still young, but I didn't expect it to look as polished as it did last night.
Right. Yeah, he looked, and maybe that was the matchup. I mean, he abused Mo Harkless at times. So maybe it was just an easy matchup for him, but he looked calm, which is what you want to see out of superstars, right?
Yeah, and really confident and not confident in a way that was a detriment to his team. It was very effective.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good night of opening basketball. You want to do games for tonight?
Yeah, we got a guest coming up with Jason Friedman from Rockets.com. So let's get some games in, and then I'll plug him in.
All right, Cavaliers are 3.5-point dogs tonight, hosting the Brooklyn Nets in their debut.
Cavaliers, 3-point dogs to the Nets?
3.5-point dogs.
3.5, so,
At home.
I kind of like the Cavs. No, Brooklyn's got to win, right? They've got to start out the season with a dominating performance. I guess I'll go Brooklyn, but I like this Cavs team.
They're so strong on both sides of the ball. I think if Bynum was playing, I might be able to buy in. I don't think he's expected to play.
Right. Because it's a basketball activity.
Right. but you got to like some of the matches in this game, right? Barzal versus KG.
That's always good.
You know, you got Tristan Thompson and Anthony Bennett versus Brook Lopez probably a little bit, and
yep.
KG.
Yep.
You got Kyrie versus Darren, which is – I was thinking about this yesterday. There's a couple of older guys, younger guys rivalries. Like LeBron's kind of got a little bit of one with Rose even though he destroys him every time. And KD and Melo kind of have one. Darren's, I think, is Kyrie. There's a little bit of the Kyrie's coming for a spot in the hierarchy thing going on.
Oh, for sure.
Deion Waiters versus Jason Terry.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Line's down, actually. Sorry, it opened up at Cavs +4, and it's down to +3.5. So
that money action.
A little confidence coming in on the Cavs, or a lot of money coming in on the Nets. Celtics are – I was shocked at this line. The Raptors open at 7.5-point favorites. They're 8.5-point favorites over the Boston Celtics.
Ooh, that's a lot of points.
That's a lot of points for a team that's pretty inconsistent.
Yeah, I guess I'd take the Raptors to cover, I think.
I'd take the Raptors. Sullinger's out with a suspension, too.
Yeah.
So no Rondo, no Sullinger. They've had some other injuries. Favarani will probably play. Gerald Wallace, yeah. I mean... the Raptors should win this game.
Yeah,
the
Raptors, there will be a point
if
where
the Raptors want to start off the season acting like they're legitimate. They need to win this game.
Yeah, and they should win it big. There will be a point when Gerald Wallace is just reading a newspaper, not on the sideline, just in his defensive rotation.
Just flipping through the one ads.
Yep. Classifieds.
The Heat are 11.5-point favorites on the road in a back-to-back versus the Sixers tonight.
Lay the points like rose petals, just like I said yesterday.
Toss them on out there. Just spread them to the wind.
Yep.
The Knicks are 8-point favorites at home versus the Bucks.
I don't know about that.
Really?
I kind of like – I mean, I like the Knicks to win.
It was 9. It's down to 8.
Yeah, I think I like this Bucks team to cover.
I like the Knicks. I like the Knicks to win big.
Okay.
Here's a great game tonight. Pistons starting the new season at home. 3-point favorites versus the Washington Wizards.
That's a tough one. That's a legitimately tough game to call.
That's a Vegas concern. Yeah. That's a what do you know?
I'll take the Wizards, but I don't feel good about that at all.
Yeah, it's I took the Wizards as well, and I'm the same way. I'm like, this is kind of concerning. Another interesting one. I love this game. Pacers on a back-to-back on the road in New Orleans. Pelicans home opener. Pacers are 2-point favorites.
I like the Pacers.
Okay. Taking the nope.
Yeah, I know you are.
Taking the nope.
Fly, Pelican, fly.
Yep. I think they went out right. Back-to-back, man. Although Indiana was superb last year on back-to-back. They were 14-8 with no rest last year.
Yep.
Houston, in my lock of the night, 12.5-point favorites versus the Bobcats. The money line on this game is up to – it's Rockets minus 1,100.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You have to bet $1,100 to 100.
Let me tell you why I'm taking the Bobcats here. I'm not. I'm taking the Rockets.
I was like, my mouth just dropped. My jaw just dropped. I was like, what? Your Minnesota Timberwolves.
Hey.
You'll be in the house, right?
I'll be there.
You'll be in the house. Wolves, Magic. The Wolves are favored by 9.5 versus the Magic on back-to-back.
9.5 is a lot of points.
That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah.
I got Minnesota covering because of the back-to-back.
I think Orlando covers. I'll go Orlando. Wolves win, but I'll go Orlando to cover. That's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. Atlanta versus the Mavs. The Mavs are favored by 5.5 in the continuing trend of no one respects the Hawks. Never trust the Hawks has become never respect the Hawks.
But I thought you'd never respect the Mavs either. That's what Mavericks fans tell me. Nobody respects them. 5, you said? 5.5?
Yeah.
I like the Mavericks, I guess. At home. No. Hawks. Hawks will cover.
Yeah. I got the Hawks as well. I got the Hawks winning outright. Game that's going to make me nauseous. The Spurs are favored by 5 at home versus the Grizzlies.
It's a weird decision for Duncan and Parker to sit to get some rest on opening night, right? I'll take the Spurs. It's hard to go against the Spurs.
I've gotten by 11. Portland is on the road in Phoenix, where they are 6-point favorites.
Yeah, lay it.
I think this one could be close, though. For whatever reason, I just think that the Suns could backdoor cover on this.
I think it'll be close for a couple of quarters.
Sacramento is a 3-point favorite versus the Denver Nuggets tonight, which kind of shows you where the Nuggets are at.
Well, they are starting J.J. Hickson and Anthony Randolph at the forward position, so I can't believe
Anthony Randolph has been the most consistent 3-pointer in camp, by the way.
Sure.
Be like,
oh, the Kings. I don't pick Anthony Randolph teams when he's starting. Kings at home. Kings
cool.
Kings at home. Huge emotional night for them with the whole, you know, staying in Sacramento. Like, this is, I think the Kings are going to have a nice outing.
This one's another weird line. The Thunder are only 6.5-point favorites versus the Jazz in Utah tonight.
Yeah, no Westbrook. I could see that.
You like Utah?
No, I like Kevin Durant, but I can see the line.
I've got a bruising for the Jazz. I've got the OKC winning big. And your game of the night, Lakers. Your Xavier Henry and the Los Angeles Lakers travel on a back-to-back to Golden State to take on the Warriors. The Warriors are 12-point favorites.
12? I'm going to – oh, man.
Swaggy had a bad game last night. He can't have two in a row. Right?
Bad game. He had 13 points, son. 13 on 10 shots. I'll take that.
For a while there, it did not look like that. He got some free throws.
Yeah, he got a lot of free throws.
A lot of free throws.
I'm gonna ride the Swag Time Lakers.
Okay.
Give me the Lakers.
I'm taking the Warriors. I feel good about it, but I'm kind of like, you know what? One of these West Coast teams has to live up to the billing, right?
You were 2-1 last night. I was 1-2, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
1-2 on the season for 2-1.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy Jason. He's a fine writer.
He's fantastic. I love him.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt. Now we're switching gears from last night's action to tonight's action, really this season, with the new-look Houston Rockets. Dwight Howard is now a member of the Rockets, the first game against the Bobcats. I've got Jason Friedman from Rockets.com. Jason, how's it going?
Great, Zach. How are you?
I'm excellent. It's a little early for me, but it's always a little early for me.
Yeah, I don't really do mornings very often, but, you know, I have such strong, fond feelings for you. I figured I'd make an exception.
I figured I could weasel you into a couple, you know?
As long as you give me like another 15 minutes to rant about Ted, then I'm good.
I did actually watch it, so if you want to rant about Ted, that's doable.
Well, I hate to ruin the podcast right off the top, but just give me like your 30 second analysis of what you thought.
It tried. I'll give it that. It really
doesn't
tried.
That make it worse.
Probably. There were parts of it where. Like, as I was in the moment of it, I was kind of like, oh, this isn't so bad. And I had low expectations because of what you had told me about it.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, this really isn't so bad. And then I thought about it the next day. I was like, God, that was a crappy movie.
I think the thing that probably killed me is what kills a lot of people with movies that they really just abjectly hate. And it comes down to one of my good friends recommended it.
Yeah.
So I just felt complete and utter betrayal. And two, the fact that it just had so much success. And I mean, this isn't a new phenomenon, obviously. There are tons of things, whether it's a movie or musical artists that just enjoy unbelievable success and you can't figure it out. But I think just the fact that there were so many people who came away from that movie and they're like, oh, that was so hilarious. I can't wait to buy the Blu-ray. And just, what? What? Like, what is going on with society? I don't understand. Like, I need to just, you know what? I need to go into complete J.D. Salinger mode.
Yeah.
And become a hermit. I can't deal with you people.
It really did Bieber out. Like, it did like $150 million or something like that. Like,
oh,
it went
And they're
going to
make
crazy.
A sequel.
Oh, yeah. I'm fine. I mean, I'm fine suspending, you know, reality for a movie plot. I'm really into that. But it just... I don't know. It was really stupid.
And you know what? Stupid can be okay.
Oh,
but,
sure.
You know, I can embrace stupid. I don't want it to come across as like, oh, if it's not a French art house film, I don't want anything to do with it. But this was just, I honestly will never forget the day that I watched that movie. I was in the movie theater. It was, I think, July 1st or July 2nd because NBA free agency had just started. And pretty much the entire second half of that movie, which seemed like it took about 5.5 hours, I was on Twitter following all the NBA free agency moves.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the only thing that got me through that movie. And especially the second half, which just went completely off the rails. I mean, the Fenway scenes and everything else.
Oh, yeah. I've
already gone too much.
It could have done without the whole, like, creepy stalker angle. If you cut that out, I think it's a decent movie. I felt the same way. Your experience watching it was my exact reaction to when I watched Big Mama's House 2 in the theater. Except I walked out of the movie an hour in.
Yeah, and I would have done the same if I hadn't been there with friends and I hadn't had Twitter to rescue.
I was in there with friends, and I just said, screw this, I'm out of here. I can't take it anymore. And I went into the arcade and I played like that run and gun arcade game, which was a fantastic basketball game. I just played that for like whatever, 40 minutes or whatever it was.
That's one of the 10 best decisions of your life.
To change
out the second half of that movie for run and gun.
That's a top three decision. I probably am I'm probably homeless with some kind of addiction if I don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically the difference between trading for James Harden or deciding that you're going to pass on him.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's a big fork in the road there, and you made the right choice.
Right. I believe that's what the Wizards did. The James Harden era Rockets have become the James Harden and Dwight Howard era Rockets, and that's got to be pretty fun. I mean, it was preseason, but they were dominant in preseason. As you wrote on Rockets.com, they were just, my God, they looked incredible.
I don't think you could have scripted it any better from a Rockets standpoint, honestly. I mean, first and foremost, as with any preseason, you just want to stay healthy.
Yep.
And they did that. They had a little scared James Harden's knee on the last game, but he's fine. And then, you know, you want to see, all right, it seems like all this stuff will work on paper. How is it actually going to play out, though, on the court? You know, yeah, Dwight Howard and James Harden seem like a perfect inside-outside combination, but how's it really going to look? How are they really going to gel and come together? And I mean, really, from day one, they went out there and they just dominated people whenever they were on the floor. Whenever the Rockets had their core guys out there, I can probably only pick like one or two stints from the entire preseason when they didn't completely control the course of play.
Yeah.
And then you want to see, okay, those guys, we already know they're really good. They're going to play at an all-star level as long as they're healthy. What about the supporting cast? You know, what are we going to see from Chandler Parsons in year three? What are we going to see from Jeremy Lin and Patrick Beverley? What about some of the new guys like Omri Caspi? And all of those guys played well and probably, honestly, you know, exceeded expectations. Now, like you said, it's preseason. There are caveats galore. You know, let's wait and see what happens when the real games start. Let's see what happens, especially when, you know, some sort of adversity hits, whether it's injury or other, all those things. You know, this, we all know, it's a marathon, it's a grind. You're going to have ups and downs, but at least for the month of October, all the things that you wanted to see if you were a Rockets fan, I think you saw in spades.
Absolutely. The two stats that from your article that really stood out to me was Dwight Howard and James Harden played 150 minutes together on the floor. Houston outscored its opponents by 44 points. That's incredible. And then the other one was when Howard, Ashik, and Patrick Beverley were on the floor together, the opponents shot 29%. Now, that is preseason. Who knows if they were going against great lineups for all of that time together. And I have my reservations about the Ashik Howard pairing, not from a defensive standpoint, but from an offensive standpoint, just because it seems like an awkward fit to me. So I don't know how that will work. But if you're holding people to 29% because you throw Beverley out there with those guys, maybe that doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I think to me that is almost certainly the biggest reason for optimism about this team is the versatility that they have. I tend to believe, and I believe this from the beginning, that the Ashik Howard pairing is one that can have success, but it's going to be situational success. That's not going to be a one-size-fits-all lineup. And you know what? Like, this is our five-man group we're going to open the game with, we're going to close the game with. I think it's something that over the regular season, just because this team is so deep and so good, they can have success trotting that lineup out all the time. But it's not going to be, I don't think, you know, a 25-minute-per-game lineup that they use.
Right.
It'll be something that, you know, they'll use to start the game with, and then it'll depend on matchups and situations and everything else. But they can go really big with Howard and Ashik against the teams where that will help them. But they can play small ball. And really, I think, take their offense into the stratosphere when they just say, all right, we're going to have Dwight Howard in the middle, protecting the rim and grabbing rebounds and, you know, getting putbacks and, you know, opportunities and early transition, and we're going to surround them with shooters. And whether that's, you know, playing Caspi and Parsons up front and Harden and Beverly or Harden and Lynn in the backcourt, or putting Jeremy Lin and Patrick Beverly on the floor at the same time, throw in Francisco Garcia. You know, that's a team that they're, I think that this club can throw so many different looks at you because of the depth and because of the positional versatility they have. And that, to me, is really the biggest thing I took from the preseason, is that this team can play a lot of different styles, and they can play a lot of different styles really well. And I don't think there are too many teams that can really say that at an elite level. And again, it's just preseason. I have to like keep throwing that out there every 5 minutes so people don't freak out. But all the things that looked good on paper, we saw those things look good on the court as well. And if this Rockets team is going to fulfill the potential it has, I think a lot of it's going to come down to the fact that no matter what style of play their opponent prefers, the Rockets have a lineup that they can throw out there that will at the very least match up pretty well, as just the same way that the other team can.
Yeah, I think the natural inclination is to look at what Dwight Howard's been a part of in the past and say, well, how does that translate? Because he was successful. I mean, they didn't win a championship, but went to the NBA Finals with the Orlando Magic. They were incredibly successful. And so you start, like, trying to find comparisons. And it's like, all right, Dwight's obviously Dwight. You know, when this team goes small, you can kind of make the case of, like, Chandler Parsons is their Rashard Lewis. James Harden is their Hedo Turkoglu. Jeremy Lin is their Jameer Nelson. And then, I don't know, whoever wants to be Courtney Lee or, you know, that can be Patrick Beverly or so, or whatever. But you look at that kind of lineup and you think, like, that just works. Like, it's just the Harden-Howard pairing is something where, you know, I think you want to see Howard embrace the pick and roll more than he did in L.A. last year. But for the most part, there's something about just somebody confidently throwing post-entry passes to the big man and then knowing how to move off of him. Like, Harden can, you know, kind of curl around him. He can fake inside and pop out for a quick pass. Like, there's just so many options they can do in such a basic set.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, with Harden in particular, he's just, I think everybody recognized that this was a very good player in Oklahoma City. Last year, obviously, he took it to another level. The thing that's really impressed me is I was very curious to see, okay, he got his first taste of big success being the man. How was he going to respond to that? Was he going to respond to that in terms of, I've made it, and a little bit of that, like, human nature contentment kicks in? Or is he going to respond by, I got that first taste, and now I want more. And you know what? I'm going to go back, and I'm going to add some subtle things to my game that's going to make me an even better player. And, you know, how would he respond as well to Dwight coming in, getting all the attention? You know, this was a team that James Harden basically helped resurrect and was the biggest part of that resurrection.
Right.
You know, now Dwight's coming in and the media circus comes with him. Yeah, how's James going to react to that? And again, early days, the honeymoon is still very much in full bloom right now. But all of those things that I just mentioned, James has responded as positively as anybody could have hoped. He came back in better shape, and we hear that, I think, about all 400 NBA players, but he really did come into camp in great shape. And his decision-making and all those little subtle things that you look for, he hasn't had to force anything this preseason. Again, this is where it really helps to have other guys who can help carry the offense in stretches. I mean, last year, especially once you got down to the playoffs, it really was like, all right, James, save us. You're our only hope.
Right.
But during the preseason, you know, with Dwight Howard in there, with Parsons, with Lynn, with Beverly, with Caspi, it really brings out the playmaking side of James Harden. And, you know, what I think had a tendency to drive fans crazy last year when the Rockets got tight spots, and it was just, all right, ISO James, you know, if you can hit that 25-foot step back three, we win, and if you can't, we're doomed because we can't create anything else. You know, that's not, I don't think, going to be an issue nearly as much this year because the Rockets have so many other options and have so many ways to attack defenses, and quite frankly, they just have another year of playing together. And so you're seeing a lot more movement. The unselfishness, not just with Harden, but team-wide has been huge. And, you know, again, these are all the things that you look for a championship team. We watched Miami, you know, evolve year one of the big three to last year when, you know, they look like the Spurs out there from time to time with incredible ball movements and, you know, LeBron and D-Wade moving off the ball. You're starting to see hints and signs of the same things manifesting themselves in Houston. And, you know, that's what this team is going to need because it's one thing to go out there and win 50 games, 55 games, 58 games. It's another thing to be able to, you know, when other teams are scouting you in the playoffs and they're able to hone in on your strengths and weaknesses and pick and probe at those soft spots, you've got to be able to adapt and evolve, and you've got to be able to beat teams in different ways. And those are some of the signs that we saw from this Houston team during the preseason that makes you think, you know, maybe this team doesn't have to wait a year. Maybe they can legitimately compete for a title this season.
You mentioned the Heat, I think that's the reservation I have with the Rockets going into the season is not that I don't think they'll be good. It's that I wonder how long it'll take to click, because when you add superstars together, there is often an adjustment period. I mean, I think a lot of people say, well, look at the Celtics when they got Garnett and Allen. It's like, well, yeah, those guys were in their 30s. Like they were veterans. There was just a little bit more, you know, there was more experience involved. Whereas you've got, you know, guys in their mid to late 20s coming together. Is there a concern around the team of like this might take time to gel, or is there just confidence of this fits too perfectly? We're going to be fine.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a work in progress here. Guys are going to have to get on the same page on both ends of the floor, especially I think as it pertains to, you know, trying to get Dwight ball in the post, for example. That's something the Rockets haven't had a post presence since Yao.
Right.
And, you know, there were very evident times during the preseason when the Rockets would try to make post passes and they just weren't good at them because they haven't had to do them for years. And so, you know, that's something, you know, that timing, that's going to have to come, but that will come over the course of the season. And, you know, when Dwight signed, I would warn people all the time, look, yes, this is obviously a no-brainer decision for Houston. But don't be surprised if they get off to a slow start.
Right.
You know, think about Miami, and they went 9-8 in their first 17 games when the big three came together. Like, these things don't always mesh perfectly. You mentioned the Celtics, and yeah, I think the Celtics are an outlier. Like, you had a very unique set of circumstances there that allowed them to hit the ground running and basically become a dominant team from day one. The one thing with the Rockets, I'll say, is, and you touched on this, the fit seems like something that is really going to expedite that transition process because all the pieces really do fit together very well. And, you know, that was the biggest thing, I think, for Miami was, look, you've got two ball-dominant guys, and they're going to have to, if not completely overhaul their games, they're going to have to undergo a pretty radical transformation individually before they can really fully tap into that potential. And I think for Houston, you're not going to have to see as much of that radical overhaul in terms of style of play individually or from a team standpoint because those pieces do just naturally mesh very well together.
That's going to be, I think, the frustrating thing for me watching this team is that because it's Dwight and because he was, you know, I don't expect you to speak to this, but he was a jackass in LA last year for a lot of the season, and it, you know, just his antics with the whole, you know, upcoming free agency, rub people the wrong way, fair or not, and they will pounce if the Rockets struggle. And I think it's reminding people that it's such a long process to bring a team together and get them going in the regular season. It's, you know, yeah, let's say they start out 4-5. That could be a problem. But the fact that I actually think their division is so tough. I mean, it's probably the toughest division in basketball. I can't think of another one that really rivals it.
I think it's the best division in basketball, and it's not even close.
Yeah, because of that, it's that sucks for them, but it also maybe pushes them to say, look, we can't take as many games off to figure this out. Like, maybe we have to push forward, and I don't know, maybe that's the benefit, and that keeps them from a prolonged, you know, kind of adjustment period.
I think that can be a galvanizing force, and I also think the fact that, you know, this team is just very motivated, and that you can't underestimate. You know, Dwight is very motivated to put the past behind him and to prove to people he's still the best center in the world. You know, look, did things go horribly off the rails last year in L.A.? Absolutely. But you know what? Short of being able to purchase a DeLorean, there's nothing you can do about that. The only way you can make amends is to go out there and take care of the business at hand. And I think he understands that. I mean, look, I agree with you. This team, we're not going to fully know about them until we see how they do handle adversity.
Right.
That's the case for every team. And, you know, up to this point, they haven't hit any bumps in the road. We're going to have to see how they deal with injury, how they deal with fatigue, how they deal with, you know, the first time there's some sort of controversy surrounding either Dwight or somebody else. All those things, you can't know until you go through it. But the fact that you do have so many guys who are motivated from a personal standpoint, from a team standpoint, I can tell you that the chemistry for this group has been off the charts from day one. You know, I mean, Dwight signs, a big chunk of guys go to L.A. to work out for a week on their own as a group. You know, that was something that Harden organized and Parsons organized and Howard organized. You know, Jeremy Lin and Dwight Howard have gone off to Aspen together and train together. The Asia trip, you know, everybody's hanging out together. They're singing karaoke. I mean, really, you hear all this stuff and it becomes cliche, but everything I've seen and experienced being up close and personal with these guys, they genuinely like each other. They genuinely hang out with each other. And obviously that helps. It's not a secret that Kobe and Dwight clashed a lot. And that was
right.
The contrast of styles that and attitudes and demeanors and approaches that just didn't work. And, you know, before they even came together, there was talk about would they be able to work or would they completely clash. And that was before that trade even happened. So it's not a huge surprise there. But at least in Houston, up to this point, everybody's getting along. Yes, I fully expect there to be bumps in the road. And that's when we'll learn about that side of the Rockets. But there are plenty of reasons, at least up to this point, to believe that it can be different, that they can coexist in a way that Dwight hasn't really seemed to have, really since probably that NBA Finals team in 2009.
There are still very young components of this team. You've got kind of a power forward situation that doesn't seem quite set. You've got Donatus, you've got Terrence Jones, you know, I guess Greg Smith's still in the mix. You've got young guys like maybe Isaiah Cannon and Omri Caspi, still relatively young, you know, trying to contribute. How many of those young guys have to figure out a way to stay in the rotation? Because I feel like, you know, you don't run that deep in the NBA. I mean, most teams go like 8-9 guys, but one of those guys, maybe even two of those young guys, have to step up into their role, right?
Maybe. And I say that only because you know, watching the preseason, Kevin McHale's rotation became abundantly clear to all. And that was, you know, you've got your five starters, you know, and it sounds like Patrick Beverley is going to be the starting point guard tonight. Jeremy Lin's going to be in that six-man role.
Right.
And then you've got Omri Caspi, Francisco Garcia, Aaron Brooks off the bench. And right now it doesn't look like Terrence Jones or Demo are really in the mix for any sort of significant minutes. Now that can change, obviously, in moments notice with a trade or an injury. Greg Smith, you know, you throw in there as well for some short minutes. But really, I think that, yes, over the course of an 82-game season, because there are going to be injuries, you're going to need one of those guys, if not multiple, to step up and contribute at some point. And I think they're capable of doing that. But right now, you know, I think that the vast majority of the guys Kevin McHale is going to be leaning on are young veterans, I would say. I mean, you can't call Patrick Beverley and Jeremy Lin full-on veterans, but, you know, they've been around the block at least a little bit themselves. Aaron Brooks, obviously, is like the elder statesman almost of this team now. But it is going to be very fascinating to see how this unfolds. Primarily because I think everybody assumes at some point there's going to be a trade, because there's always a trade with this team, and, right. and there are you know, plenty of possibilities out there that exist and opportunities that we can't even conceptualize right now that are probably going to open up down the road as we get closer to the deadline. So, you know, and I think the Rockets' history has shown that there are going to be young guys on the bench that we're not talking about right now who get thrust into the spotlight at some point and become key contributors. I mean, one guy, you know, it's probably unlikely for this year, but I wouldn't rule him out, is an undrafted player like Robert Covington.
Yeah.
He was somebody who, you know, if you're looking for a young guy who could just come out of nowhere, who could contribute, he's somebody who has the length and the shooting ability to be an interesting option at that stretch four position. And, you know, right now, Terrence Jones, I think, gives you probably the more well-rounded of their power forward crop of young players in terms of what he can give you defensively and on the boards and a little bit of offense here and there. Demo, you know, skilled in the low post, but still has major strides he's got to make on the defensive end. You know, Robert Covington is a smart, crafty player. He's more athletic than you think. He can rebound his position. He can shoot the ball really well. It wouldn't surprise me if in March he's somebody who comes up from the D-League and is making an impact. But, yeah, I would fully expect either until a trade is made, if a trade is made, that there's going to be a lot of talk about, okay, you know, the Rockets are doing just fine with their current lineup, their current rotation, but surely they've got to make some sort of move that's going to solidify that power forward spot. And I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that stance, but the one thing I will say is I really do strongly believe that, much like last year, that this team's strongest lineups, and probably the lineups that are going to close games the most, are going to be those that just have Dwight Howard in the middle and spreading the floor with shooters all around. And I think that's going to be a virtually impossible lineup to stop. And I think that's probably going to end up being a lineup that Kevin McHale leans on very heavily. So I wouldn't necessarily expect them to play with a traditional power forward.
Right.
And a lot of key, you know, high leverage spots, because I think where they're going to be at their best is when they've got a team that can go up and down and they can just spread the floor. And, you know, maybe they give up a little bit defensively because they're a little undersized at the four, but nobody's going to be able to stop them because you've got James Harden in the backcourt alongside Jeremy Lin or Patrick Beverley, and you've got Chandler Parsons, Francisco Garcia, or Omri Caspi, some combination of those guys in the corners, you know, guys who can hit 40 to 50% of those shots when they're open. And then you've got Dwight Howard manning the middle. And I think that's going to be a lineup that, when we're looking at the numbers at the end of the season, we see a huge point differential because teams just aren't going to be able to come close to consistently slowing down a lineup that has Harden and Howard at the core, spreading the floor with shooters.
The Lynn Beverly thing is interesting because, you know, the kind of leaks out yesterday that Beverly's going to be the starter, and it initially I thought, oh God, that sucks for Jeremy Lin. But now that I think about it more, it's like, well, all right, you kind of get to recapture more of that because he is primarily a ball dominant guy, and that's where he's good. And if you throw him out there with a second unit, I know it's not like a hockey line change, but with the second unit, and he's kind of the man to initiate everything. You don't have him on the floor with James Harden as much. Maybe that takes more pressure off of him to fit in. Like, maybe that is the best way to get him to fit in with this team. And, you know, I don't know that it makes him lesser of a player than we thought necessarily. I just think it's, if you can adjust a guy's role to, you know, give you a better attack for the full 48 minutes, I'm buying into this move the more I think about it.
Well, this is not an apples to apples comparison, but I'll throw this out there. If Jarrett Jack can be a sixth man of the year candidate,
yeah,
the way he played last year with the Golden State Warriors, I absolutely believe Jeremy Lin can be a sixth man of the year candidate coming off the bench for the Houston Rockets. He's going to have the opportunity, like Jack did, to play against other second unit guys, which is only going to heighten his ability to get to the rim and to make plays. Jeremy Lin has been very aggressive consistently throughout the preseason, pushing the pace, attacking the basket. He's a very good passer, very good player off the pick and roll. And as you mentioned, that skill set is somewhat mitigated when playing with Harden because you want the ball in Harden's hands the vast majority of the time. And, you know, with the Rockets last year, you saw a lot of Jeremy Lin sort of relegated to spot-up shooting duties. And that's not his strength. Now, right. He did a lot better shooting the ball the second half of the season, was close to 40% from three the last 2.5 months. But, you want to put players in position where they're going to be able to play to their strengths. That's something traditionally the Rockets have done very well. And I think this allows Jeremy Lin to be able to do the things that he does best, have the ball in his hands, push the pace, and make plays for himself and others. And, you know, I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility whatsoever that he could put up similar numbers to what he did last year, maybe even better, even though he might be playing a few minutes less this year than he did last. Because this team, we know they're going to push the pace, they're going to have tons of possessions, and we know they're going to be able to score the ball. And, you know, I think that I can make an argument for either guy starting, although I will say in the preseason, when you look at lineups where the Rockets had Patrick Beverley playing with a threesome of Parsons, Howard, and Harden, or Lin playing with a threesome of Parsons, Howard, and Harden, the lineups with Patrick Beverley did a little bit better on both offense and defense.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it's preseason, small sample size, take that for what it's worth. But, you know, this Rockets team, we know they're going to be able to score the ball. The key is going to be, if they're really going to be a championship contender, can they field an elite defense as well? Well, as we talked about earlier, if you put Patrick Beverley with Oshik and Howard, those are three pretty darn good defensive players on the floor at the same time. The Rockets want to set the tempo defensively. Then you bring in Jeremy Lin, and you take the chains off him, you unleash him, you allow him to do all the Jeremy Lin thing. And, you know, like I said, he's obviously not the same sort of player. He has a different style than Jarrett Jack. But the same way Jarrett Jack really thrived, coming off the bench, injecting energy, being able to provide a spark for the Warriors last year, I can see Jeremy Lin doing very similar things for the Rockets. And if the Rockets are as good as I think they're going to be this year, Jeremy Lin is doing those sort of things, that's going to put him front and center, especially given the fact that he gets so much attention just by his mere presence, because he is somebody who is beloved internationally. He's got a huge following. So if the Rockets are in the spotlight and they're playing well, and Jeremy Lin is coming off the bench and consistently providing a spark every game, don't be surprised if his name is right there in the list of, like, the five best six man of the year candidates at the end of the season.
Yeah, I had Daryl Morey as my pick for executive of the year, and then we're talking on the podcast about our awards predictions, and Matt Moore brought up to me, well, he's a stats guy. They're not going to let a stats guy win it because I mean, with the way some of this voting goes, I kind of agree with that. But I do think there is a threshold where if the Rockets are X amount of good in the league, then there might not be a choice. There might not be a case really against him. Is there a benchmark for that, do you think? Do you buy into that at all? Is it they've got to win 58 games? If they win 58 games, you know, he probably has a great shot at it?
I guess it depends, too, on what the other teams do. And yeah, I'm sure just the same way that there was resentment against Pat Riley and the Heat, you know, when they made their big coup. And I'm sure people everywhere were like, you know, just waiting to give themselves a reason to not vote for Riley as executive of the year because everybody was just so angry. I think that, sure, there's definitely some sentiment league-wide that's hoping to see the Rockets fall flat. But, you know, I think that you look at the body of work and take emotion out of it. How can you really argue? I mean, this team.
Yeah, I mean, Billy King does have a great case, which I cannot even believe I'm saying that. I think I just gave myself an aneurysm, but I can't believe I'm saying that. But King does have a legitimate case because it does take those giant moves, and getting KG and Pierce and Kirilenko was a giant move that. And it's, you know, it's Brooklyn, like that's going to get the attention. So I think, you know, he's probably the favorite for it. But what Daryl Morey's done is equally as impressive, if not more, in my opinion. So I agree. Like you look at what he's done, and it's just kind of like, what more do you have to do?
Well, and it's hard too with Daryl because, you know, the move that really was the pivotal domino was getting James Harden.
Yeah.
And that was done a year ago.
Right.
And so you can't give him credit for that. And that's what I think always makes this award so tricky is that, you know, when you're in this position, same with Pat Riley. I mean, you had to have this vision years in advance to even give yourself an opportunity. And that's the same with the Rockets is, you know, they had this vision and really this is the culmination of 4 years worth of work, at least. So when and where do you draw that line for criteria? But, you know, the fact of the matter is people want to award guys who put together championship rosters. And, you know, for both Billy King and Daryl Morey, this is sort of, if not the culmination, it's certainly, you know, the biggest opportunity yet that they've had with their respective franchises. And, you know, I'd be hard pressed to give it to someone other than Daryl, assuming the Rockets fulfill their potential.
Right.
But I've also been very close to the process and seen this at work and felt and seen from the fans the abject despair people felt a year ago over, like, we're never going to be able to get a big name. We're linked to every all-star player, and we don't get any of them. How is this team ever going to be anything else but a perpetual jogger on the treadmill of mediocrity? And, you know, that required a heck of a lot of faith and due diligence, and let's be honest, luck, to be able to have things fall in such a way that just a little bit more than a year ago when this team, you know, its best player was Kevin Martin, is, you know, now sitting here thinking that it has a legitimate shot to compete for a title, and in big part because it has two of the 10 best players in the NBA.
That's a fantastic point. A little over a year ago, or basically a year ago, the best player on this team was Kevin Martin, and now you've got James Harden and Dwight Howard. That's kind of absurd when you think about it that way.
I mean,
yeah,
it really is. I hate like using hyperbole, but in a lot of ways, it's kind of unprecedented for a team to lose two All-Star players overnight the way they did Yao and McGrady, and to hover around the 500 mark for 3 years, and without having, you know, anything resembling a top five pick, now you've got two of those guys on your team, and you did it without bottoming out. I mean, that's just not the way life works in the NBA, and, you know, I think that this team ultimately is going to be very much an outlier, similar to how the Celtics were, and similar, you know, everybody was like, oh, if you're going to rebuild, you got to use the OKC model. Well, you know, the OKC model kind of includes, like, drafting Kevin Durant. How many of those opportunities are you going to have?
Right.
You know, okay, like, it's the Rockets put themselves in this position and give them credit for it, but they'd be the first ones to admit to, you know, we got really lucky. If Oklahoma City decides that they're not going to deal Harden, then who knows where this team is right now? I mean, they could be where the Sixers are, and just having decided, you know what, screw it, we're blowing the whole thing up, and we're going all in for the draft in 2014. But the fact of the matter is, the pieces did fall their way, and now they're sitting here, and the really remarkable thing is, because of the relative youth of this team, you know, this is not a team that's looking at necessarily just a 1 or 2 year window, but this team could be really good for a really long time if the breaks continue to go their way.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited to see what happens this season. I'll make you a deal that when Ted 2 comes out, I'm coming to you. We're going to go see it, and we're going to tear it down.
I can't wait, and I can't believe I'm saying that. That's probably more improbable than, like, your props to Billy King, but, yeah, I would relish that opportunity.
Well, I appreciate the time. We can read your stuff on Rockets.com. Follow you on Twitter, @JasonCFriedman. Jason, always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks so much, Zach. I really appreciate you having me.